Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. I'm Patrick. It is snowy here in Indianapolis, and unfortunately, I just watched the Indianapolis Colts lose to the Kansas City Chiefs, and so they are out of the playoffs, but they've had a great season. It was hard. They got kind of dominated. But anyway, Tony, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good here in Korea. It is not snowy. It's just kind of cold.
Oh, well, that stinks. That stinks. Yeah, we had a good snow today. We had about 6 inches, so and we're going to get a little bit more tonight, it seems like, so it's nice. But anyway, we have got a really good show. We're going to do story time with Uncle Tony. I don't know what this story is, but I cannot wait. Cannot wait to get into it. We're going to talk about the CES technology show, which happens every year in Las Vegas. And there's a lot of crap in that show, but there's always a hand. I mean, it's some really terrible stuff. But there's usually a handful of interesting prototypes or products that some of the major or big companies are coming out with. And so we'll just talk about a couple of those. And it was a good show this year from my perspective. I thought it was a pretty good show. Rather than being kind of ridiculous or outrageous or just trying to grab headlines, there's a lot of really practical stuff that's seemingly coming down the pipeline and stuff that we'll probably most likely see. And I thought that was good. But I want to start off with virtual reality, Tony, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about the Lenovo Mirage, which is a standalone virtual reality headset. And I didn't have a lot of nice things to say about it because I don't think it's a very good headset. I read this article on CNET, I wrote an article called Virtual Reality. I'm hopeful for its future. But I read this article, Virtual Reality Feels Like a Dream Gathering Desk on CNET by Mark Saros. And it kind of really summed up how I feel, where we were promised this virtual reality, which is going to revolutionize everything. And if you're reading tech blogs, The Verge, Engadget, Gizmodo, Tech Radar, virtual reality was going to change everything. It was going to change business. It was going to change schools. It was going to change how people watch movies and play video games. And then virtual reality showed up and nothing changed. In fact, what virtual reality movies you had, they kind of stunk. Virtual reality TV shows were stupid. They were more like experiences and shows, and the games were very simplistic and straightforward. But that is starting to change a little bit, and it's making me a little bit hopeful. And the industry that's changing it that I see the most is the gaming industry, and PlayStation in particular is doing it. They have their own headset called the PlayStation Virtual Reality, PSVR. And I was listening to a gaming podcast called Kinda Funny, and they were doing their top 10 games of the year, and a bunch of them had virtual reality games, PSVR games. And I was kind of surprised, and I took a look at it, and these games have been getting far more refined, getting a lot more just better, and just a better experience, where instead of going on and doing the same thing for about 20 or 30 minutes, and you're like, yeah, I'm done with it. People are actually, you know, sticking with it, and there's longer games. There's more to do in the games. They're utilizing the VR environment a lot better, and you know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that what will happen with these gaming industry will trickle down into the education industry, because that happens often. And we'll be able, maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the road, be able to reap the benefits. But right now, it's, unless you have a very specific need for VR, like you mentioned, Tony, where kids were putting on VR headsets and walking through architectural designs that they had made. I don't really see a need. I don't think it fills, or virtual reality solves any problems that schools have these days.
Well, we were motivated by your review of the Lenovo. So At school, we purchased one to test it, and now they're going to purchase 8 more.
Oh, what? Why?
Well, because we bought some augmented reality software and curriculum from a company, and it works with the iPads. And because the way the Lenovo works, this company stuff is in the Play Store, so we were able to install the app on the Lenovo headset, and all the augmented reality curriculum works in it. And it lets the kids do like a pretty deep geography exploration of the planet. It lets them do all kinds of like cool interactive stuff, but it also transmits out with Chromecast to like the classroom projector. So
yeah, that is true. Yes.
So what the ed tech guy in the elementary is going to do is he's going to make like a interactive program lesson that he brings around to the classrooms, because he wants to work directly with some of the units, specifically with geography and social studies. So he's gonna try that out, and he wants to have, you know, a few kids in each room participating at the same time, but he wants extra headsets because he wants to teach teachers how to use the curriculum, because there's like a math curriculum and a reading curriculum, and he thinks if he could make it into a game for the whole class where you've got a couple of kids like running, you know, kind of running the VR and the other kids interacting, he thinks that the kids will just have a really good time with it.
All right. Hey, well, let us know how that happens.
I don't know. We like the headset. The weirdest thing is just getting like disoriented in the room when you're using it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They definitely need, like, I just think all the headsets need to be wireless. Like, you can't have any wires. It has to be wireless. Second, you need some kind of device on your body, like on your hand or your arm, that helps the headset orient you in the room, so you always can switch to see where you're at, like in your actual space. There must be a way to do that without opening up the front of the headset to let like actual light in.
I know that at CES, Oculus, which is owned by Facebook, they have now a standalone headset, and Oculus is way more powerful. It's going to have much better graphics. It's going to be way more powerful because it's meant for gaming. That's its primary purpose. So it's going to be way more powerful than the Lenovo Mirage, but there's no price yet on that. And HTC Vive, again, another gaming meant for gaming, is also a standalone headset as well, but I don't believe any of those have front-facing cameras on them. But yeah,
right. That would help.
That would, yeah.
Like, I don't even know if you need a camera. Like, I was thinking, like, you can bring your hand up in front of it, and if you have like some kind of device on your wrist, it could show you like your orientation. I think that's possible if you like when you get settled, you tell, like when you start, you tell like the thing on your wrist, like, in front of me is the door. Like, you choose your directional orientation, and then it remembers it during your session.
Yeah. Okay.
That way you could do it. Like, if you were laying down on the bed, you could be like, okay, you put your hand up and say, up is the ceiling. And then it like creates your orientation. I think that's totally possible.
Yeah, I just,
I'm getting too Ender's Game on these people.
I've not read the book, but I've seen the movie.
In space, you have to choose what is up and what is down and stick with it, because there is no up and down.
That's correct. That is right. My wife and I were talking about that with video games, like, you know, flying in space and that kind of stuff. Another problem I had with the Lenovo is it didn't quite fit really well on my head, and I was constantly trying to adjust it. And as a teacher, I mean, maybe that your method is what you guys are doing at your school is probably the better way to go, where you have somebody's coming in, so you have two teachers in a room, and you also have students who are probably familiar with it and are helping as well, because you know, just one teacher going around and adjusting and helping people get this on and get it fitted right, and I can just see that just being a bit of a nightmare. And and with this geography thing, do they wear headphones for that, or is it just, can they hear what's going on around them?
The Lenovo headset we have has like surround sound. headphones.
I just didn't know if the app that they would be using.
Yeah, there's sound and content. Sound and content.
All right. Yeah, because the one I had also had a headphone jack, and you had little earbuds.
That's what we have. But it seems to be fine.
Yeah, it blocks out a lot of noise, and I don't know. It really does kind of, and I understand that's part of the point for VR of kind of immersing you into this environment. But as a classroom, you know, I think if you have a bunch of these headsets going, as a teacher, you would want to be able to still communicate with your class.
Yeah, you should be able to at any time. If all the kids had headsets on, you'd need to be able to message them or something all at once.
Yeah. So, but that's okay.
I don't think we're there. You know, I think the future are like sunglasses, basically like Google Glass. I think that's where it's at. It's not these big headsets, but it's getting closer to that.
Yeah, it is. It's going really slow. And in that article, the guy wrote in CNET, he went to a panel about virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality. And the panel was with people who work in work specifically in that field, and they were talking about like why hasn't it evolved faster and more? And they said that it was oversold to the public. They said when it came out, it was just oversold to the public as a consumer product. Like this is something that you will be able to buy and do in your home in just a few years. And then there just wasn't enough development of it, you know, to make it more powerful, make it lighter, kind of talk about the form factor you just mentioned. And they kind of blame just the way that it was sold to the public, you know, the way it was marketed to the public. And then when people did get their hands on it, they're like, well, this is nothing like I was expecting. This is nothing kind of what it was sold to me as, and the public kind of, you know, wrote it off and moved on to something else. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm hopeful. I think the PlayStation VR, and is a way to develop it. And I think that eventually I'm sure that they are working on Sony's making smaller and smaller, trying to make smaller and smaller headsets. I mean, the PlayStation makes so much money for Sony that it's definitely a revenue source that they're probably going to be developing pretty aggressively. They're really the only main producer of having a successful virtual reality, really successful, where lots of people, you know, millions of people are probably using it. So, I'm just going to keep on. I'm hopeful that it will get to kind of what you mentioned, and it'll just get better. And I think you're an educator, you're developing apps, virtual reality apps, take a look at the PlayStation VR and take some notes from those people, because some of those games that I have mentioned in my article are not big, giant, they're indie games. That's their only game that they've made as a team. So anyway, there it is. It's my virtual reality. I'm hopeful. I want it. I want it now, but I'll be patient. And because I know if I get it now, I'll be disappointed. I'll be disappointed with it, you know? Anyway, so that's my story about virtual reality, my little journey. And I thought I'd like to share it with everybody. Now, Tony, I understand you also have a story for us.
I do have a story. I have an awesome story.
And I have never heard it. I don't even know what this story is about. So
I was going to write a blog post about it, but the reason I haven't is, one, I think people will get really angry and like attack me. And two, you know, it's not really, I wouldn't say this is scientific enough to like actually write about. So I'll just discuss it. When I was on vacation, I was kind of bored, and some people were posting that thing on Facebook where it's like, copy and paste this, and then when you do, you'll start to see feeds from people you haven't seen in a long time. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, I ignore that stuff. I hardly ever use Facebook. I only use it overseas because it helps me communicate with my family and friends who are international. But a couple of smart people I know did this. And I messaged them, and they're like, look, I don't know, I just did this for fun, but actually, as soon as I did it, I started seeing like status updates from people I haven't seen in like a year or two. So I was like, okay. So what I did is I looked through my like in, you know, my news feed, and I just for 2 or 3 days, and I just kept track of the people who come up, like, because I'm not really interacting with any content. This is important. I don't really click on anything. I don't like comment on stuff. So I'm like, okay, this is what Facebook thinks I want to see if I take no action. So then I just kind of made a note of who those people were, and they are pretty much all the same. They were basically the same 10 or 15 people. And I'm like, you know, I do have a lot more friends than that, and I know it's the Christmas holiday, so why aren't I seeing any posts for trips?
Yeah.
So I did it. I copied and pasted this thing, and I put it in, and it's, I would say, like 20, 30 minutes later, I started seeing posts from people that I hadn't seen in a while from their Christmas trips. Now, here's what's funny. What's funny is, after I posted this, I actually immediately followed up with a separate post that said, I tried this, and it is working. Then everyone starts replying, he's been hacked. He's hacked. He would never do this. He's too smart. He works in IT. Why would he do this? This is a hoax. And then someone posted like this Snopes thing, like, oh, Facebook says that this isn't how the algorithm works. It's a hoax. And I'm sitting there like, if Facebook is limiting your news feed through some stupid plan, they're not going to tell you. They're not going to admit it, right? Like, oh, Facebook denies it. Of course they would deny it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't prove it, and they're not going to admit it. That's what was ridiculous. I'm like, with all the negative press on Facebook right now, everyone's like, no, they would be honest about this. And you're like, no. So anyway, I started getting all these messages, and I made like a stock reply and sending it to people. Like, and I tried to explain to them how I believed that this was working. And I was just kind of shocked at a couple of things. Number one, copying and pasting this text in your like newsfeed doesn't hurt anything. So why not try it? People were like, I don't know, I'm skeptical. And I was like, why don't you just try it? I don't understand. You could just do it right now, and then you would know. It's a knowable thing. You can just do this and wait. No one is posting saying if you do this, you get hacked. No one. There's nothing. Facebook doesn't tell you you're going to get hacked, nothing. So it's like, why not just try it? They wouldn't try it, Patrick. I'm telling you, they were afraid. These people were afraid. They were afraid to copy and paste. And I'm like, this is so weird. It like blew my mind. I'm like, you'll post links to articles that you don't even know where they come from. You'll post links to interactive content. You'll post links to apps. You will circulate photos that are completely inappropriate, but you won't copy and paste this just to see if your news feed can become a little bit more robust. And it was really strange.
And it's just, so anyway, is it just text?
It's
code?
Just text.
It's just
no link. It's text. Text that I typed myself in a text editor to make sure it wasn't coming from. I took the text from somebody else's post, put it in text edit. Checked it, there was nothing in it, and then posted it back. Okay, so just so everyone knows, like, I actually tried to approach this in a very minor scientific way. Now, I think it's pretty simple. The Facebook algorithm obviously groups people based on their activity. So I'm probably someone who has very, very low activity. So it's just kind of randomly choosing, maybe it randomly chose a group of people just to constantly steadily feed me information. And then it's like, you know, these 10 or 15 people will just keep doing it. Okay. For whatever reason, it chose those people. But then some of my friends did this thing, this copy paste thing. So when I did it, it linked me to everybody that had done it.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
We were copying and pasting the exact same content. Or they had commented on it on their wall or something when someone else did it. Basically interacting with the same content I just decided to use. And because I'm not a heavy user, there were no skip logic choices for it to make. It's like, oh, he hasn't really posted anything that matches anybody else in his friends group for like 5 years, but he did today. So now anyone else who's posted this themselves or commented on it somewhere else, we're going to start sending their news to him because they have something in common. I think that's really simple.
That is. That's a genius way, too, of getting in contact with some older people.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And so, anyway, it's not like a big mystery, and everyone's like, this is a hoax. Facebook doesn't limit you to 26 contacts. I'm like, that's not what I'm testing here. I didn't say that. All I said is I pasted this in, and after I did, I've got more information than I had before. And then I even followed up and said, if I stop using Facebook, probably I'll go back to that original 10 or 15 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I was just shocked that, number one, all the people that were like, you've been hacked, even after I specifically said I was not hacked, because I knew people would do that. Secondly, the people who said they were skeptical and were afraid to try it, that just bothers me, because I'm like, were they afraid it would like destroy their Facebook and then they would just be like owned and have no friends or family anymore? Like, I don't know.
Well,
I downloaded all of my Facebook data last year.
Yeah. How was that?
It was fun. I encourage everybody, download your Facebook data, go through all your old messages, all messages that are just irrelevant. Delete all of them. Don't archive them. Just delete them. Just get all that stuff down. And then one day when Facebook shuts down, you're not going to care. You can just download your Facebook content, once, I think. Like, you get the whole archive. So I did that. And after that, I just stopped putting things on Facebook as much. So there's just not really anything to back up anymore.
Yeah. I deleted my account about a year ago. And I didn't. All I did was back up the pictures.
Yeah, are you doing okay?
No, I'm doing fine. Like, because I used it, like you used it, to keep in touch with my friends internationally. But now, I mean, the friends I really want to keep in touch with, I have their email address, and so I can just send them an email.
Yeah, well,
and they respond, and it's fine. Everything works out fine. I'm okay.
I know there's a big fad right now with watching Tidying Up on Netflix and reading the various Marie Kondo books about organization. My wife started reading those years ago. Like, she's been into this forever. So let me just say this. If you look at a Facebook friend and they do not spark joy, delete them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Facebook didn't bring me much joy, so I just deleted it.
But Patrick.
So, yep.
Did the CES show spark joy in you?
It did. It did. It did. It sparked a lot of joy in me. And for people out there who don't know, it's a consumer electronics show, though I don't think they call that anymore, but everybody still calls it CES. I'm not sure. And it's huge. It's massive. And it goes on for about a week, and it's in Las Vegas, and they've been doing it for, I don't know, two decades, maybe three decades. They've been doing it for a very long time. But since maybe 2010, it's gotten really large, just really stupidly large. You can be just any two guys could have a booth in there. They're like, hey, we're selling selling pens that when you write, they emit a smell of strawberries and make you happy. You know, I mean, it could be something as simple as that. But anyway, it's a great show for televisions and displays. Just great, because you see a lot of really cool stuff. Like, OLED displays were first really shown off at CES years ago, like the flexible OLED displays.
Yeah.
And now, Tony, LG has a TV that is rollable.
Does it work?
It does. It worked. Sweet. And it's going on sale in 2019. So what it is you have it's a big TV. It's a 4K TV. It's like an 82-inch screen, so it's huge. But what you have is this rectangular prism that would fit just about anybody's living room. And you hit a button, and the TV – now, the rectangular prism is only maybe I'm just guessing here. Okay, so if I'm wrong, people can correct me in the comments or email me but it's about maybe 2 feet tall. You know, or 24 inches, or what is that in centimeters? About, gosh, maybe 60 centimeters. Anyway,
convert it in the show notes.
I will. And you hit a button, and the TV rises up out of it because it rolls up the TV because the display is foldable. Mm-hmm. It's an OLED display, but it's foldable. You can actually roll it up like a fruit roll-up if you wanted to. And that's what this thing does. It is really cool, and it's going to be stupid expensive. But
wonder how much it's going to go for.
I'm going to guess $8,000.
Wow.
I'm just guessing. Yeah. Just ridiculous. Ridiculous. But the big thing was Samsung's micro LED panels. These things are awesome. Now, they unveiled them last year, but they were for corporate or businesses, or for, like, you know, displays that you would put in a store or in a business or something. And what they are is they are square panels, maybe like 1 foot by 1 foot, 12, you know, like I think it's 20 inches, 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters or something like that. But you can put them together and you see no seam, and they would kind of talk to each other, and they can display however you want. And so you can arrange a panel any way you want it to look.
Yeah, it's going to be programmable.
Yes, yes. And in there, they had a display up, and it had a moving wall. So the panels were sliding apart from each other, and then they would slide together. And then all of a sudden, it seemed as if they were just one screen, just magically. It was unreal. It was unbelievable. I have no idea what this is going to cost. I have no idea. But this, man, this is fantastic. Imagine if you had a display in your classroom, or maybe you had it, maybe you have it in your theater, and all of a sudden, like one of the panels goes out. Well, you can just pop that panel off and replace it with one panel instead of having to replace the entire screen. You know?
Yeah, that's good. This would really be good for, like, developing for really large spaces too. Like, be awesome to have like a huge screen in an auditorium or something, and you could show the content in the center and like translations on the left and right, and just move stuff around.
Yeah. Yeah. And these panels are very, very, very thin. Very, very, very thin. Maybe I want to say that they're 2 millimeters or maybe 4 millimeters, but we're, you know, thinner than your finger kind of a thing. I mean, really thin. So being that thin, they're probably fairly light, and just, it's pretty remarkable. For you can go to YouTube and you can, or Vimeo or the Samsung site, and I'm sure you can see all sorts of videos of these things in action. And everybody, I obviously didn't go to Vegas, but everybody who saw it on every tech blog, they were just blown away. They're like, it's unbelievable. You see these screens come together, and then all of a sudden they're one screen and there's no seam. And I'm standing a foot away from it, and I still don't see the seam of this display, and it's just remarkable.
I think that we should like try to make a set a goal that IT Babble next year will podcast from the CES 2020 show.
You know what? We can do this. We can do this. So at CES, you can't just walk up and buy a ticket. You have to buy your tickets online ahead of time, and you have to say, because it's a consumer electronics show, you have to be representing an organization. So we could be representing IT Babble, and we can show up there, and we can go and go and do it. I like that. I like that idea a lot. I'm all for it. I can't wait. The Zoom H6, H5, I'm sorry. No, H6, yeah. It'll travel. It'll be good. And also, there are some really cool laptops. Speaking of LG again, they have a 17-inch laptop, and I don't know why anybody would want a 17-inch laptop that weighs less than 3 pounds, Tony.
LG does.
It's part of their LG Gram line. It's a 17-inch laptop, less than 3 pounds, 19 hours battery life.
The Gram is the most popular laptop in South Korea.
Is it? It's a very nice-looking laptop.
We have some people that have them at work. They are very light. The ones we have are a few years old.
Some other laptops. Dell improved on the XPS 13 line by Asus made a super thin laptop. And they have a notch, you know, on cell phones, they're all screens and they put a notch like in the screen. This actually is a little bit above the screen. And it has the cell phone camera in there. And a Lenovo, a company that you like and is actually thriving right now. Laptop sales were down for pretty much everybody except for Lenovo. Lenovo made massive strides in the market. They made a super thin, I think sub 2 pound 13-inch laptop. And and Chromebooks too. 14-inch screen Chromebooks for less than $250. Usually that price point is for the 11.6-inch, but now we're seeing Chromebooks. We're seeing nicer ones that are higher, like $400 or $500, and some of those quality ones that were $400 or $500 are now dropping significantly in price. I think
I'm gonna buy like in the summer. I think I'm gonna be buying a laptop, and think I'm gonna get a Lenovo X1 Carbon. That's what I'm gonna go for.
Oh boy, that's a great laptop. I've seen that. I've seen that one in person. That thing is.
I have the Lenovo like 13-inch lightweight laptop now, but my wife's gonna need a laptop, so she said she would take the one I have, and I can get another one for work. But yeah, I had, you know, overall I'm pretty happy with Lenovo as a company, and I was just thinking with this new setup that we've been running here in South Korea, we haven't had to purchase Windows Professional.
Really?
Because everything's in the cloud, right?
Oh yeah.
So we put some basic management stuff on Windows 10. And it uses like third-party software, so it's pretty simple. Like Windows 10 doesn't have to do anything; it just installs this client. And if people have Windows 10, they use it, and we can monitor it. But with everything in the cloud, I mean, we just don't really have a lot of stuff that we need to update. The antivirus software, it updates automatically, even on Windows 10 Home. Like we're not having to purchase the Professional Edition, and I just did kind of an audit recently because I'm like, well, we probably are going to have to upgrade these. But the point is that I'm not seeing a reason to need it, at least at a school. And that's a huge cost savings for people that don't know. I mean, it shaves $200 or $300 off the unit.
Yeah, easily. And before, you would kind of need that pro version, especially if you were for the whole Active Directory where people would have to sign in,
right?
And you can kind of control, push out programs over the air and control who can log on to a computer and who can't, just for security reasons. And awesome.
But we're doing all that without Active Directory, so that's why it's working.
Yeah, through Jump Cloud, right? I think it is.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
So interesting.
Very.
All right, man. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, and one other thing. Dell made a gaming, the Alienware. So they made it's huge, but the idea of it is that you can upgrade it. So you can take everything out of it. You want to upgrade the processor? No problem. You want to upgrade your GPU, your graphics processor?
Oh.
Yeah. Before, this was unheard of, but this stuff is soldered onto the board. Now you can. You want to upgrade. You could even change out. Let's say you have HDMI, and you're like, wow, I want HDMI 2.1. I don't want this HDMI now. Or I want a USB-C display. You can actually change out the video ports.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unreal.
I have to say, like, I actually owned an Alienware once, and I only owned it for a short time, and I sold it. And luckily, I bought it at such a good price that I was able to sell it 3 weeks later for the price I paid for it.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Why did I sell it? Because
it was heavy?
I had it for 2 weeks, and I had it in repair twice. It was under warranty.
Oh.
And I don't know, like, the reason I bought it, the battery life was actually great. I really liked the concept of being able to turn the graphics cards on and off. So it was like I had amazing battery life for office stuff, but if I needed to edit video or something, I could turn it on and do it and then turn it off when I was done.
And
the keyboard was great. I do a lot of typing. The keyboard was good. Like, it's just more ergonomical than most people think. But yeah, it was this breakage was killing me. So I'd be interested to know if the builds are better now.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that Windows Windows laptops and Windows computers are getting pretty innovative. And so there seems to be kind of a groundswell of interest over the past few years with them, which would explain why Lenovo is doing so well. In fact, I think it was HP was a publicly traded company on the stock exchange, went private, and now they are back on the stock exchange again. They've gone public again because they've done so well. They've turned their business around. So yeah, I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see. I know the Lenovo laptops are just rock solid, and their service is very, very good.
The service for Lenovo is good. Yep.
It's right up there with AppleCare. It's very difficult to beat. So. But that's it. That's my CES. My CES. Update.
Good job. Yeah, maybe next podcast we should start it off with the three or four worst things at CES.
Oh man, I will look.
I'm sure somebody has literally made the worst of CES already.
I'm sure. Now, one thing that was at CES is that Amazon's Alexa was everywhere, and Google Assistant was everywhere.
Mm.
This is something that is actually kind of nice. Apple has made deals with all major television manufacturers, Sony, LG, Samsung.
So they're going to finally put the Apple TV screen sharing in, right?
Yeah, the AirPlay. AirPlay 2 will be built into all of these TVs, as well as Google Chromecast. So sharing your computer screen, doesn't matter if you have a Windows or an Apple computer, to a screen should be a fairly simple process and should work. Of course, we've been hit and miss with our Apple TVs. Everywhere I've ever been at that's had Apple TVs has been hit or miss. And everybody I've talked to has had them has had hit or miss. They work about 80, 85% of the time. And so, but.
Yeah, I think, for all the people out there invested in Apple TVs, I believe it is a product that will die soon because Apple never licensed out their technology. And now they are because they don't want to make these little boxes anymore. Because if they license this out, then all they have to do is make a partnership with Samsung and let Samsung sell you a TV. Mm-hmm. And they just get a cut. And they just get a cut of licensing. And it's probably better for them. And it's the main reason, that we have to look for other options for screen sharing is because I don't want Apple TVs in the classroom.
Yeah.
And the fact is now, like, if you're in Korea and you buy Samsung TVs, they work with almost everything. I mean, it's really easy to broadcast stuff to them. So and I just think it's a better experience.
Yeah. And that lines up because Apple is starting to make their own, like, TV shows and stuff.
Right.
And they want that to be on as many screens as they can, not just people who have Apple TVs.
Well, a lot of companies, so I found out, like, at least in South Korea, a lot of companies that sell TVs, the TV itself is still a Samsung. They've just bought, like, the components, and they're allowed to buy the components and put a different shell around it and some, like, options and sell it as a different brand.
Mm-hmm.
So it could also be that Apple's going to start selling TVs, like an actual Apple TV that comes with the connectivity and everything that you need and somehow makes it easier for you to use their streaming service.
And that has long been rumored. In fact, there's new rumors out there that Apple is going to bring back their cinema display at some point.
Yeah, well, I think, crazy as it is, I think those cinema displays were really popular.
They were. I had one. They were just so expensive.
But they're really good. You don't need to buy them often.
Oh, no. The only reason I sold mine was because I was moving to China. And as you know, Tony, if you ship electronics into China, they charge you for every piece of electronics that come in there. And then they will hold your shipment until you pay this tariff or this tax. And so.
Yeah, if anybody wants to feel good about living in the United States, take a bunch of stuff to Asia and see what happens. You'll get so mad. You'll be like, man, It's not that bad in America.
No, it's pretty good. We have it. It's pretty good here. It is definitely pretty good here. So,
all right. That's all I've got.
That's it. That's all I've got too. I'm going to go watch the Cowboys and the Los Angeles Rams play. And right now, let's see here. The score is 20-7 in favor of the Los Angeles Rams, which is, if you're following the NFL this year, you'll know that is not a surprise. So, because the Rams are really, really good.
They're on fire.
They are, yeah. They are 13-3 and the most potent offense, one of the most potent offenses in the league, I think. Maybe the most potent offense in the league. And they have a very good defense. And yeah, it's just their year. I think they're going, I don't know if they're the favorites for the Super Bowl, but I think they're the favorites. Anyway, but there you go. I just enjoy watching football. I'm not an expert at it. So, but that's it. That's all I have. I'm babbling out there. So I'm going to close things up. I'm going to close things up, Tony.
All right. All right. Well,
yep. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And keep on babbling out there. And you can always find us at www.itbabble.com. And, of course, you can find our podcast there. Subscribe to us with your favorite podcast app or on iTunes. We're there as well. All right. And that's it. We're out of here. Bye-bye.